The weather forecast for the weekend calls for a chance of thunderstorms in New York City. They're a very common feature of summer in our area, and for most of us, they're both fascinating and terrifying. For this week's Please Explain, we have invited Wal Zaleski. He's a warning coordination meteorologist program manager with the National Weather Service Southern Region Headquarters to tell us what causes these storms, how they're tracked and studied, and whatever else comes to mind. Hello. Welcome to our show.
Well, hello, Leonard. Thanks for having me aboard today.
And we also invite our audience to join in. The number to call is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Well, we usually say thunder and lightning, but have we got it backwards?
Well, typically speaking, lightning always precedes the thunder. So if you hear thunder, you know that lightning has occurred as a predecessor to that. And the reason that happens is lightning, as it does occur, creates a rapid expansion of the air around the lightning bolt and thus makes a very deafening sound that we know as thunder.
But we first, if the lightning is close, we hear a crack that goes with the lightning.
Well, if you hear a crack almost immediately with the lightning, that means that lightning bolt is extremely close to your location. And we have a simple rule of thumb that we use to help estimate the distance from your location to that lightning bolt. And I could give you that. And it's relatively simple. You start off from the time you see lightning, you start counting in seconds. So let's say that you've counted 10 seconds, and then you heard thunder. You would divide by 5. 5 is your magic divider, and 10 divided by 5 would give you 2. That is the approximate distance in miles from that lightning strike. So if you hear lightning within about a second, or you hear thunder within a second of that lightning that you've observed, that lightning bolt is about 1,000 feet away, or even closer.
And the reason that we see the lightning first is that the speed of light is quicker than the speed of sound.
That is correct.
Now, I learned that lightning is electricity in grade school when we were studying the Founding Fathers, and Ben Franklin became the topic of discussion. How does electricity form in the clouds, and how did he even think that it might?
Well, he was very astute, and of course, they used a kite to help determine if there was actually electricity in the clouds. And of course, many of you that have gone to school and remember the story about Ben Franklin using a kite that traveled high up into the sky, and then lightning struck it, and it caused electrical charge to come down through the string, and then eventually illuminate a key that was in a glass jar. Well, that was a very effective way of at least learning about it, but very dangerous. And we would not recommend anybody do that nowadays, simply because of the potential risk in getting shocked by the lightning bolt. But lightning is caused. Static electricity in the atmosphere is a normal part of the Earth's atmosphere, and it is readily induced or created in great positive or negative charges by developing clouds that we see in the sky, usually in the late morning through the afternoon. These are the cumulus clouds, or what we call the precursors of thunderstorms. Now, every thunderstorm needs 3 basic ingredients in which to develop. And we have these in the United States as well as other locations in the world. But specifically, east of the Rockies, we have a greater abundance of these ingredients at any one given time. Thus, we have a lot more thunderstorm activity in the south, and especially during the summertime months. And those ingredients are, you got to have moisture in the atmosphere. The air has to be unstable. That is, it has to want to rise vertically into the atmosphere. And then you have to have some sort of mechanism to lift this air. That mechanism could be a cold front, it could be a sea breeze, it could be a mountain, or it could be, frankly, just the sun's heat alone, heating up the surface of the earth, allowing moisture to percolate vertically into the atmosphere, condense into clouds, and continue to rise. Now, as the clouds rise into great heights into the atmosphere, there become areas of negatively charged particles and positively charged particles. And when that charge differential becomes great enough, you make a connection and you have a lightning strike. So basically, lightning is nothing more than static electricity.
And you were talking about barometric pressure, weren't you?
Well, barometric pressure. Now, that's something a little bit different, but a lot of people always ask the question. They see it talked about on the nightly news. You hear your favorite weathercaster say the barometric pressure is 29.92 inches of mercury. And I think the average person at home might ask, what exactly are they talking about? What are they measuring? Well, meteorologists have found out over the years that we're able to assess the health of the atmosphere by measuring its weight. And when we say its weight, it's another term for actual pressure of the air being exerted on the surface of the Earth. For instance, when you walk down the street, you're carrying a certain amount of air pressure or weight on your shoulders from the atmosphere all the way up into the sky. Now, our bodies have become adjusted to that, as with every other living creature on the Earth, but there are minute differences in the amount of the weight of the air at any given time, and we measure that with an instrument called a barometer. Now, typically speaking, warm, moist air weighs less than cold, dry air.
That goes against...
It goes against normal, logical perception, but mm-hmm. what it is the molecular weight of cold air is more, it's greater, the air is denser, so there's a greater molecular weight in a cubic square foot of cold, dry air than if you compared it with a cubic square foot of warm, moist air. Now, warm, moist air wants to rise, it's buoyant, whereas cold air sinks. I think any New Yorker in the area has experienced this on a typical winter morning when they've gotten up, going to work, going to school, getting up to feed the baby. And you get up in the morning, and you put your feet down on the ground out of your bed, and it's cooler down at ground level than when you stand up closer to the ceiling. It's much warmer because warm air rises and cold air sinks. And if you look at the atmosphere as a whole, that principle applies the same way. Cold air is dense and has a tendency to sink. It weighs more and pushes more, puts more weight down on the surface of the Earth, thus it exerts greater pressure. So when the weatherman says the pressure is rising, it's now 29.92 inches of mercury and rising, what he's saying is that the air is now becoming heavier. More likely, in a general sense, you've got fair weather moving in. If the pressure is falling and that the air is actually becoming lighter and more buoyant, wants to rise, generally speaking, low pressure is moving towards you with the potential for more cloud cover, rain, thunderstorms, and all the other hazards that go with that.
My guest is Walt Zaleski, Warning Coordination Meteorological Program Manager, National Weather Service, Southern Region Headquarters. We're talking about thunder and lightning on today's Please Explain here on WNYC, WNYC.org. And we invite your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. Not all rainstorms include thunder. Even in the east, in Southern California, I gather you rarely see thunder and lightning. But are there special reasons? Is it certain kinds of clouds? Are the clouds higher or lower in the atmosphere?
Well, there are. You're correct, Leonard. There are different types of clouds. And we have classified 27 different states of clouds. Typically, there are two processes, what we call convective. When you have those ingredients for thunderstorms to bubble up into the atmosphere, you have the moisture, you have the unstable air, and you have the lift. You get thunderstorms that produce lightning and thunder. But when you remove a key ingredient, that is unstable air or lift, you get mainly what we call stratiform clouds or clouds that basically do not have a lot of vertical lift into the atmosphere. Thus, you get more of a light to moderate rainfall minus the lightning, minus the other hazards such as tornadoes and downburst winds and hail. Typically, in some areas of the country where you're missing a few of these vital ingredients, you can still get rain, but you don't get the other associated impacts that come from convective or the cumuliform type of clouds that form when you have all the right ingredients coming to play, and that's moisture, unstable air, and lifting mechanism in the atmosphere.
But can't lightning sometimes strike without rain?
You can have what we call clear air lightning. And typically what it is, the lightning is originating usually from some thunderstorm source to an area in clear air where there's a difference in particle charge. So the thunderstorm might be positively charged, but you can have a shooting stream of lightning as far as 100 miles away horizontally into clear air. And we've seen that. And it's very typical with thunderstorms during the spring and summer months to see lightning in areas away from the parent thunderstorm. And that's what makes thunderstorms so dangerous to people that are outdoors. And let me give you some examples. You might say, well, when is it safe to go outdoors after a thunderstorm? We recommend about a 30-minute period to wait for that thunderstorm to exit your location. That is, it's probably a safe bet to be able to go outside and not be impacted by lightning after about 30 minutes after you've heard the last clap of thunder. Now, many of the lightning fatalities that occur in the United States, and I'm looking here at a graph of about a 30-year history. We average about 55 lightning fatalities per year in the United States from thunderstorms. Many of these occur not during the middle of the thunderstorm when it's raging and pouring rain and lightning bolts are striking abound. It's usually from the first or the last lightning strike. Now, as a thunderstorm is approaching, many people get caught off guard because they haven't heard thunder yet. There hasn't been any type of a severe thunderstorm warning. There has been no other activity. The only clues you have are those billowing white cumulus clouds that are growing to great heights in the sky. And if you're outdoors during the spring and summer, it's always a good idea to kind of keep an eye on the sky. It doesn't mean you have to be Pollyanna about it, but you just should always be aware. It's called situational awareness, because those first lightning strikes are the ones that catch people off guard, whether they're outdoors doing yard work, they're on the golf course, they're swimming at the beach, they're working around the backyard, and they're not paying attention to their situation from the atmospheric standpoint, and a thunderstorm can creep up on you with that initial lightning strike.
But, Walt, I would assume that the lightning would be attracted to something metal. Are we lightning rods as well?
Well, sure. Typically, lightning will want to reach the quickest route to the ground. So you try to minimize from being the highest point in any location. And you want to basically stay away from objects that are tall. Typically, in our surroundings, trees are the tallest things around us. Now, if you're in New York City, if you're on Manhattan Island, of course, the tall buildings do receive many lightning strikes. In fact, we have footage of the Empire State Building being repeatedly hit by lightning. That current is then redirected from lightning rods into the ground and unaffecting the people around that area. But generally speaking, let's say you're in Central Park and a thunderstorm is on the horizon, you hear the thunder, you want to get to shelter as quickly as possible, because if a lightning strikes a tree and you're under it, you stand a pretty good chance of being shocked by what we call the side flash. That lightning bolt will go through the tree, but because of the intenseness of that lightning bolt, you'll have a side charge that will also impact the person standing next to the tree.
Walt, we have to take a little break. I want to come back to this. I also want to find out whether being hit by lightning is almost always fatal, and if you do survive, what does it do to your body? We invite our listeners to call in. Our number is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a question or comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is Walt Zaleski of the National Weather Service. Stay with us for more. We're back with Walt Zaleski. I think it's safe to talk now that the thunder has subsided. Walt Zaleski is with the National Weather Service, Southern Region Headquarters. That's in Fort Worth, Texas. And I don't know whether Fort Worth is an area that gets a lot of lightning, or whether you're closer to Southern California and are pretty much spared.
Leonard, we do get a considerable amount of thunderstorm activity, typically speaking in the months of April and May and the first part of June here in the Fort Worth, Dallas area. Being in North Texas, we often become a battle zone between the cool, dry air to the north and the warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico. When those ingredients do battle with each other, they form the mechanisms for these great towering thunderstorms to develop that produce rainfall, of course, the deadly lightning and the hail and damaging winds that could be in the form of either straight-line winds called a downburst or the tornadic winds. And we do get it all out here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Right now, of course, we've been very dry, and we've had an absence of rainfall for the last 2 months.
Lisa from Long Island has written in. She wonders what causes heat lightning.
Well, heat lightning is somewhat of a misnomer. Typically, heat lightning is nothing more than lightning that's at a great distance, but because the thunder, you can't hear it, it appears that it's just from the heat. You're going to get thunderstorms when it's warm outside most of the time, and it's usually temperatures of 80 degrees or better. But again, it's when you see lightning that is at a great distance, but because of the great distance, you just cannot hear the thunder.
Vic from Chester, New Jersey wants to know about a curious Swiss phenomenon known as fern, a static charge going over hills.
Not familiar with that.
Okay, well, let us go to one of our callers. This is Linda from, where are you from, Linda?
Philadelphia.
Hi.
Hi there. Good afternoon. My question pertains to right before a storm hits, whether it has thunder and lightning or not, right before the rain bursts through, there's always this scent, well, most of the time there's a scent of like an earthy, musty smell that comes about, and I'm curious as to what brings on that smell.
That's a good question. There's a lot of different things that occur. Sometimes you feel just before the rain occurs, maybe a drop in temperature of 10 or 15 degrees with a gust of wind. And sometimes that variation in density of air will stimulate the air and you smell something like earthiness. I've smelled something like that every once in a while. I also smell the moisture as a gust front is on the leading edge of a thunderstorm. And what you're sometimes smelling there is actually the moisture in the air coupled with the dirt and debris that's been lifted from the advancing gust front. So that's an astute observation. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does occur with some thunderstorms.
Yeah, we could often, I can smell rain in the air. You were talking about what happens when you're outside and you know that lightning is approaching. So we should stay away from a tree, but where do we go if we can't get inside?
Well, this is a very difficult thing to answer because there is no one good answer to that, because what we're trying to get people to do is to be aware of the situation before the thunder starts. That is to know what the forecast is, to keep an eye on the sky. If you are caught outdoors and there is no place to go, just your best bet is to get to some safe shelter. Really, that's all you can do, because hiding under a tree is not a good thing to do. What we are trying to advise people is to look for ways to improve your odds at surviving, and the safety rules that we provide help you improve that. And again, staying away from trees.
What about swimming?
If you're outdoors and you're at the beach or at the local lake, you see lightning or you hear thunder, best thing to do is get out of the water, because that lightning strike to the top of a lake, that electricity can be conducted through the water and you could be shocked by that lightning strike.
How many volts in a typical lightning strike?
It's in the multiple thousands. It varies. Often it's calculated by amperage. And there is a difference between negative and positive lightning strikes. So usually the amperage, which normally will kill a person, is greater with a positive lightning strike. Now, we have found that people that get struck by lightning often again, struck by the last or first lightning bolt. Now, the last lightning bolts of a thunderstorm are often associated with what we call the anvil or the overhang of a tall thunderstorm cloud. And many of those lightning bolts are positively charged, and the amperage is often on an order of 10 times that of a negative lightning strike. And when people are struck by those, they often do not survive. Now, we do get people that do survive lightning strikes, but often they end up with permanent injuries.
Well, what happens to your body after you've been struck by all those volts of lightning?
Well, you can suffer very long-term debilitating symptoms such as memory loss, attention deficits, sleep disorders, chronic pain, numbness, dizziness, stiffness in joints. We've had people report irritability, fatigue, weakness, muscle spasms, depression, and it's a whole host of other related illnesses. But generally speaking, the lightning attacks your nervous system, and that is a lot of voltage going through your body. So the idea is to mitigate that from happening by minimizing your impact with lightning. And again, probably just staying away from trees would be one of the biggest things you could do to improve your odds of surviving.
Because lightning will split a tree. But what does lightning do to a house or a building when it strikes it if it doesn't have a lightning rod?
Well, typically inside of a house, you're in much better shape. I mean, that's when we tell people to seek shelter. We're saying seek shelter in a sturdy, reinforced building, not under a tarpaulin or a tent, but basically inside of a building of some substantial construction worthiness, like a downtown New York building, or in your home. Those are going to provide a tremendous level of sheltering from the lightning. Of course, once you're in that facility, you want to minimize your contact with running water through the pipes. So you want to prevent, minimize, or at least wait till after a thunderstorm passes before you take a shower or a bath.
I've always been afraid to be in an airplane when there's a lightning storm, but I have been. Why aren't they affected? They're so close to the electrical charge.
Well, they are. You'll often see lightning emanating from the wing of an airplane, but there's enough built-in redundant systems, lightning arresting systems within the aircraft to shield the passengers and a lot of the equipment inboard the aircraft to prevent damage to the aircraft. So lightning does strike aircraft, and lightning has been observed to emanate from aircraft as it's moving through a highly charged zone in the atmosphere. Again, the engineering designers of aircraft have figured out ways to really insulate the aircraft internally from problems that are associated with lightning strikes, especially to electronics. So great strides have been made in that direction.
Our phone number here is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a question or a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And before I go to the next caller, does lightning ever strike twice?
Yes, it does. And again, right there in New York City, a prime example of that is the Empire State Building can be struck many times over from a single thunderstorm just because of its height above the ground. Lightning always, again, tries to strike the tallest object on its way down from the base of the cloud down on the ground. And it may not always strike the tallest, but it tries to. It tries to find the quickest point to that ground point.
Now, people have cell phones. Many people only use cell phones. Is it safe to be talking on the phone during a lightning storm?
We do not know of any issues with cell phones, but we do know that landlines, the old-fashioned landline telephone, does pose a risk. So we recommend that you stay off a landline because lightning can strike the ground or a telephone pole, and that charge from the lightning strike can travel through that line and into your handset and cause a charge.
And as you said earlier, stay away from water, so don't take a shower during a lightning storm.
Right, I avoid it, and my family members, I stress to them to avoid it. And when we have thunderstorms nearby, we try to minimize that simply because it would be a remote possibility, but it can happen. But if you're inside your house, you stand you have a very good line of protection. And now with vehicles, as long as you're in a hard top vehicle in a shell, you're offered a good level of protection from lightning. Now if you're in a convertible, you're not.
One of the reasons not to have a convertible. I knew there was a reason. Let's take a call. We go now to Dawes in Briarcliff, New York. Hi, Dawes. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing fine. What's your question?
Well, I was a meteorologist, believe it or not, in World War II in the Navy. And in those days, if you forecast sunny, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and then at sunset there was one clap of thunder way off in the distance, that was considered a very poor forecast because you missed the thunder. Nowadays, when you say there's a 95% chance of showers and it doesn't shower, is that a good forecast? How do you decide whether these days whether a forecast is good or not?
Well, I would have to side with you. I would say that if a forecast is calling for a 90% chance of showers or better and you don't get any rain, well, that's not a good forecast. We do strive with the best that science can offer and the best knowledge we have of the science of meteorology to provide the American public the most accurate forecast possible. And we're constantly reviewing our forecast, whether how well they do over a geographical area, and look for ways to improve that. We use a lot of computer technology. We use satellite data. We use radar to help track and observe thunderstorms and forecast where these thunderstorms might produce potential impact. And that's really probably the biggest area that we stress is the warning system, where we want to really ensure that the American public can benefit from the science and technology that has been developed in Europe and the United States over the last 67 years. Radar is probably one of the most beneficial tools that have ever been developed from a military source to commercial use. And every citizen in the United States benefits by being able to go to a National Weather Service website, weather.gov, and click on radar and see showers and thunderstorms developing right in front of their own eyes, looking at virtually the same imagery that a meteorologist looks at the National Weather Service. And we provide that to the public so they have these tools so they can improve their everyday activities and minimize impact from weather. And so along with forecasts, we're providing the basic tools, satellite imagery, radar imagery, graphical data, forecasts now that are graphically depicted to help people better utilize information so they can better improve their day and their business activity.
Dawes, thank you for calling us. We have some listeners who've written in with similar questions. Elisa from White Plains left a comment on our show page. What is ground lightning, and is it more dangerous? And then someone else asked, does lightning come up from the ground, or is it just down from the sky?
It's both, and those are very good questions. You have lightning, a bolt will basically descend from the thunderstorm, and as it gets closer to the ground, a bolt from the ground will rise up and meet that descending lightning strike and complete the circuit. So it is basically a charge descending from the thunderstorm and also a bolt that emanates from the ground upward. Typically, the bolt from the ground is much smaller in size, whereas the one that emanates from the cloud travels the greatest distance.
Stuart, hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Stuart from Croton-on-Hudson, hi. You have
hi.
To make it quick, Stuart.
I just had a quick question about ball lightning. It's sort of a phenomenon that I think a lot of people might be wondering about, I'm just wondering how it emanates and what you know about it.
Stuart, that's a very good question. It's one of the most least understood types of lightning out there. We do think it's a type of plasma source. We're not fully understanding of the principles behind it, but it does occur. It's a very rarely photographed phenomena. I have talked with pilots who have observed ball lightning actually in one case where the ball lightning entered the aircraft. It looked like a maybe about a 6-inch ball of brilliant light that was hovering in the aisles, and as it migrated towards the cabin, it basically bumped into a metallic source and got absorbed into the cockpit of the aircraft. We really don't know too much about it, but it is a very, very strange and very little known phenomena that does occur.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Walt Zaleski is with the National Weather Service, Southern Region Headquarters. We've been talking about thunder and lightning on today's Please Explain. And, Walt, thank you so much for being so informative.
Leonard, thank you very much for having me, and look forward to any appearance in the future.
On Monday's show, investigative journalist Eliza Griswold talks about the geographical and ideological lines where Christianity and Islam collide. And then Linda Leeming on her travels in South Asia. Also, the stories of Blanche, Augustine, and Genevieve, three young women labeled hysterics who shaped our early notions of psychology. Plus, Charles Mann on his new book, 1493, about the Columbian Exchange, which he calls one of the most momentous biological events since the extinction of the dinosaurs. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Stephen Valentino, Julia Corcoran, and Blakeney Schick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from William Miesmer and Todd McGovern. Debbie Fountain and George Wellington were at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.